The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio. Text WhatsApp 086 60 25000. Call 074 91 25000 or email comments at highlandradio.com.
We're joined on the programme by Kevin McPartland, CEO of Fuels for Ireland. Kevin, good morning. Thank you so much for joining us.
No bother, Greg. Morning to you.
Your organisation is calling on the government to review Ireland's fuel taxation framework. This, of course, as we as motorists face more price hikes at the pumps. What is the breakdown? Remind us of where this money goes per litre.
Well, as of January 1st, there were changes to two important government schemes, both of which are valuable contributions to how we look at the climate emergency. So the first is changes to renewable transport fuel obligation scheme. That is the amount of advanced synthetic and biofuel that we have to blend into the petrol and diesel that we sell on forecourts. So that changed the increase, the overall level, and they increased the level of particular types of biofuels. And the impact of that is to add about 4 cents per litre to the price of petrol and diesel. And in addition to that, the government also changed the energy efficiency obligation scheme. So if any of your listeners were watching Room to Improve last night or have ever gone through this, they talk about the one-stop shops, the organisations that provide grants for energy efficiency improvements to homes, and they're also operating in industry. We actually pay for the largest one-stop shop in the country, and the obligations under that increased also. That added about 0.5 cents per litre. And then, as you and I have discussed before, the government are really smart with this because they put on all of these charges and then they add VAT on top of the taxes, levies and charges they put on. So all in all, that's having the impact of adding about 5 cents a litre in the last couple of days. And that comes on the back of a number of years where we have been consistently increasing prices as a result of government taxation and regulatory charges. And the government has added about 19 euro to the price of every tank of fuel that you put into your car in the last 5 years. And we think that's unsustainable.
And to what end either, too? Because this is a money-making operation, because the figures from the end of last year, I can't recall them directly, but anyway, I know we're not seeing a downward trend in the amount of vehicles on our roads. Okay, we are seeing a slight increase in those that are electric, right? But still, that energy has to be created some way or other. So it's not driving people to electric vehicles or driving people to public transport. It just means that they're able to make more money and sort of look climate conscious while doing so.
I completely agree with you. To me, it's a stealth tax. I think the government have reached the conclusion that the Irish motorist and also people who rely on home heating oil are just a well to which they can keep from which they can just keep on drawing. And I don't think that's true, because right now in Ireland, we pay more tax on diesel than in any other European member state. And you there up in Donegal, Greg, know this better than anybody. If you look across the border, a few miles across from where you're sitting now, you can go and you can fill your tank and it will be 30 cent a litre less in some cases. And that is not just meaning a loss of revenue to the Irish government, but it's also meaning that local communities have already, in some cases, lost their local service station, which you and I have talked about this before. That's not just where you buy petrol and diesel. It might be where people go and collect their pension from the post office within the shop, maybe where they get dry cleaning done. It may just be where they get a sandwich or a plated meal, you know, if they don't fancy cooking on any particular night. Or maybe the only shop that's open at 8 o'clock in the evening when you realise you've no sliced pan for the kids' packed lunch the next day. You know, these are not just fuel retailers. They are usually the convenience store in a village or small town that has the longest opening hours. And so communities are being impacted by the threat on those businesses. It's something that the government has been paying, in my opinion, fairly scant regard to up until now. But I really do hope that the Minister for Finance will make his New Year's resolution to have a really good, long, hard look at this.
And it can be done, and in fairness to them, and in fairness to the government, it can be done without it looking like, you know, we're going backwards. You know, we can look at this in a more nuanced way, I think, and it can be framed in a way whereby the motorist can get a tax break, but it doesn't necessarily look like, you know, the government's giving up its commitments to the environment. Because what's happening at the moment demonstrably is not working. That's not an opinion. That is the facts as we know it. And also to just transition two words you don't hear as much as you did in the past. There aren't alternatives for us here. You know, I mean, obviously, if you want to go from Inishowen to Letterkenny on a certain time, a certain day, you can get a local link bus, right? But if, in terms of attending hospitals, in terms of going to the shops, all that type of stuff, we don't have an alternative. So it's getting harder and harder to run our vehicles that we are completely reliant on.
I agree 100%, Greg. And look, if the government was being judged on making policy that works for Donnybrook, they're doing a cracking job. But if they're being judged on whether what they're doing works in Donegal, they're not. It's just not working. I'm sitting in suburban Dublin right now talking to you, OK? And when I walk out the door, I can be on a Lewis in a couple of minutes. I can be at a bus stop in a couple of minutes. I have a cycle lane that'll take me down to Grafton Street or to O'Connell Street, whatever. That's fine. I don't know Donegal as well, so forgive me. But I think of my mother in Donerail in North Cork, where she doesn't have those options. It's much like you talk about, yeah, the local link, I think, comes into Donegal twice a week or whatever it might be. You know, that's no good for her if she wants to go in and get her supermarket shop in Mallow, right? It just doesn't work. So people have a far higher dependence. On average, people in rural Ireland drive twice as many kilometres as people who live in the large urban centres. So we absolutely need to address the climate emergency. Nobody is denying that. EVs are part of it, that's fine, but they don't work for everybody, or at least they don't work for everybody right now. So right now we need to be looking at how we can decarbonize transport and heating. That means using better, cleaner fuels in the existing technologies that we have. So it means more biofuels, advanced fuels, synthetic fuels in home heating oil. It means more in diesel, more in petrol. But then the corollary to that must be that we don't tax those as if they were fossil fuels.
Yeah, but if I were very, very cynical, I would say that what we could be doing now is gathering up the funds to pay the billions in fines that are inevitable, because we'll miss our targets in many different areas, not just motoring, and end up having to pay very significant fines to the EU. And I just hope that the motorists who have no alternative but to get about like they get about aren't being pushed for that money that's inevitably going to be needed.
Well, that would make sense if they were holding on to the money, but they're not. And if you speak to anybody in government, or in fact, even if you speak to anybody in Brussels, there's very little fear of these kind of big fines that people are talking about. They just don't seem to believe that they will ever be applied. And being honest, Greg, I don't know enough to give you an informed comment on that, but I've heard that said many, many times.
Okay, listen, thank you very much indeed for your time. That was Kevin McPartland, CEO of Fuels for Ireland. But there's still also to a great variation in terms of prices, you know, within a stone's throw of each other. And I have to point that out too, because for a long time we talked about, you know, very similar prices in the same area. Now there is competition, and there's 20 cent a litre difference. Now, some of it's so far away, if you're kind of remote, and I think, you know, certainly in certain parts of Donegal, further from the border, not all the time, but certainly sometimes when you've got no alternative, the price is set at a certain rate. I think as you get into the bigger areas and closer to the border where there's more competition, the price gets more competitive and varied. So it's an interesting one. Listen, thank you for all your texts coming in relation to the roads and what have you. Hello, a caller says hello. I think that speed is only taking money out of the ordinary people's pocket who might do a mile or two over the limit. There are people who are getting caught, and then there are people who are doing 100 miles an hour over the speed limit. They don't care about speed vans. It's drugs or drink. Greg, heard Minister complaining about unroadworthy cars. Where are the stats for their involvement in collisions? I left my car in for the NCT last month. Engine light came on during the test. They refused to complete the test and failed my car. I had to book a retest. Seems they opened the petrol flap, possibly by mistake, during the test. This turned on the engine light. I only realised the flap was open when I got home. All that for another £40. Another, this speed limit is a joke, full stop. This has nothing to do with safety. It's a money-making racket. It's plain to see these last few days with speed vans sitting along the roads and snow on every road, and these vans sitting inside the 30 miles per hour zone in towns. What does that tell? Well, there was a speed van on Lurgy Break this morning and cars stuck. It looked like it was stuck in the traffic. Again, they're scheduled to be there. It's like I'm scheduled to be at work today. I come to work. Even if the power went off and I'd be speaking to myself, I'd still turn up. And I suppose those driving the speed vans, that's what they're doing. They're turning up for work. Young people on quads is a major problem here in Gorta Hawk and going up Baltney. As I text this, three quads have gone up the road there in Baltney and they're all in their early teens. It's a major problem. Yeah, lots of you texting in on quads. Another, the RSA have a lot of speed vans on dirt tracks that even the sheep won't walk on. A total waste of taxpayers' money. What's needed is more Gardaí in the roads. Thank you, Niall and Carn Donat.
Get the full picture. The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Right, Brian Cannon is Director of Roads and Transportation with Donegal County Council. Brian, good morning to you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, so the teams have met, etc. And what is the lay of the land out there? Nothing really surprising. The weather forecasts were pretty accurate as to what we were to expect overnight and through the morning.
Yeah, it's relatively challenging out there, Greg. Quite a bit of fresh snow in many areas across the county this morning. So whilst our crews have all been out from 5 o'clock this morning, the fresh snow is lying in some routes. We are noticing, however, that traffic flows are generally light, so people are taking looking out the window and making some decisions based on that. I suppose quite a few school closures and other facilities closed today, which is probably lessening the volume of traffic out there. But challenging conditions out there, Greg, in a number of parts of the county where, you know, travelling is difficult.
Were all the roads on the gritting route or the treatment route able to be treated today?
They were. Now, there were some issues in some locations in Letterkenny Town. There was an issue with the gritter. But that has been resolved. And then there was also an issue in a section of the road in the N15 in South Donegal. But again, that has been, so all gritted routes have been gritted. And our crews are now continuing to patrol those routes. So where there's fresh snow, they'd be ploughing the fresh snow, or where there's need for additional gritting, they would be doing that also.
And just in fairness to them, I mean, obviously people don't mean any ill intent in it, but, you know, no sign of the council this morning or the gritters haven't been out. I was trying to explain a little earlier on in the programme, you know, that the treatment of a road is that moment in time, and its effectiveness can wane really quite quickly dependent on the road condition. So a road could be gritted at 5:30 in the morning and be a very different picture a couple of hours later, or even less dependent on the weather, Brian, in fairness to the people out there risking themselves to get those roads passable.
Yeah, absolutely, Greg. And you know, our crews have been out every day since the 23rd of December. You know, so it's been quite a persistent spell of wintry weather, albeit that up until this weekend, Friday or Saturday, it's generally been hard dry frosts generally. This weekend now with the snow coming and the temperatures varying a bit has made it more challenging. So you're absolutely right. Even on a gritted route, you can't assume that it's ice free. And in particular, where you get fresh snow landing on top of a treated route, that will lie there, and it'll actually take some traffic to drive that into the road, drive it into the salt, activate the salt that might be underneath it. Mm. So then, Greg, you know, that's 1,100 kilometres of the public road. You know, we've 6,500 kilometres of road in Donegal. So, that, you know, there's another 5,400 kilometres of other roads that aren't getting treated. And those roads will be extremely challenging for people. And we're aware that there are people that need to move around those roads as well, Greg. So, look, you're right. It's about people driving to the conditions.
You're privy to obviously the weather forecast, and you could look at it specifically. Road temperatures, which are factored in, we don't really look at that as much as you might in terms of the roads network. What does today and tomorrow look like in terms of what you're expecting? Again, these are forecasts, not set in stone. But what are you expecting?
Met Aaron have issued another yellow warning for snow and ice conditions that's lasting through until tomorrow morning. I would expect that is going to be a feature for a number of days this week, Greg. And again, it doesn't look like it's going to change that quickly. We do get updated direct weather forecasts that we use to make decisions on our road treatment and the timing of those, etc. And we'll be getting those continuously through our various systems.
Yeah, and listen, again, I'm not having to go at my terrain, but even the freezing rain warnings that were issued over the weekend, so they sort of went from, 3 o'clock this afternoon to 11 in the morning. And I think then that kind of creates the impression that right from 11 on, it's not a problem. But then as that deadline approached, they issued another one saying, oh, and also from 2 o'clock this afternoon till 11 o'clock tomorrow morning. So you really need to keep up to date, however you choose to do so, preferably here on Highland Radio or on our socials, because, because this yellow warning, this current one, expires at a certain time, it does not mean that it will not be instantly replaced by another one. So keep checking on that. Some callers asking why the ploughs don't go out and then the snow and then the roads be gritted, just again to give us an understanding of the logistics of that, Brian.
Yeah. Greg, I just missed the question there.
So no, that's no problem. I get that a lot. Say, for instance, the gap, right? Would you send a plough through that and then grit it, or do you grit on top of the snow? Callers are kind of asking, is it wise to be spreading, the salt and the grit on roads with snow on them?
It's a case, Greg, that, our drivers are experienced drivers. If the snowplough can be deployed, they will deploy the snowplough. All of our vehicles have the snowploughs attached now at this stage, and we also have helpers in all of the vehicles. So generally, we try and get the excess snow off the road as soon as we can, and then the grit will follow on behind that. That's generally the way we try and do it. However, it really just depends. And as you say yourself, Greg, the gritter could be up the road at 6 o'clock in the morning, and the snow could land on it at 6:30 following that. And to a person that's travelling that road at 6:45, might think this road hasn't been treated. Mm. Whereas the traffic hasn't activated the grit into the fresh snow.
And finally, a few people asking about the piles of grit and sand that are located in certain places. Is that for public use, or what's the story there? Why are they located where they are?
There are piles of grit in a number of areas around the county. Some of them are deposited actually on different braes or hilly sections of road that are directly just for people to spread. Others are maybe in a car park or different locations, and the public can avail of those to use them on sections of the public road. What we might do, Greg, is get yourselves to share our winter maintenance dashboard again through your social media.
For sure, yeah.
And there's maps on those that show the locations of those public use piles around the county.
Excellent. Okay. Listen, stay safe, everyone out there, particularly those people that are often out on the roads before anyone else. And just to understand the nuances of treating 11,000 kilometres of a road network. 11,000. Now, that would be too much even for your boys and girls. All right, then. Listen, thanks very much, Brian. Brian Cannon, Director of Roads and Transportation with Donegal County Council. Okay, now, on today's Monday Focus, we look at women in football. It's no secret that the landscape of football is shifting. We're seeing more communities than ever get behind the local teams. And at the heart of that growth is the Women's League. It's more than just a competition, of course. It's a bridge between academy dreams and senior reality. A recent launch took place in the Radisson Hotel in Letterkenny to announce details of the first FinHarp senior women's team to take part in the Women's National League. The top division will continue with the established clubs, while the new Development League, essentially the second tier, will be in two sections with a number of new clubs at this level, such as FinHarps, plus under 23 teams from bigger clubs, the likes of Shamrock Rovers, Shells, etc. The fixtures aren't out yet, but they will be starting in March, and Harps women will play their home games at Finn Park. Now, joining me to discuss are Rafoe's Coldy Walsh, joint captain for the first ever Finn Harps senior women's team. Congratulations. That's history. Good morning to you, Coldy.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks so much for joining us. We also have Paddy McDade, Head of Women's Development at Finn Park. Good morning, Paddy.
Morning, Greg. How are you getting on?
Good. I'll start with you, Paddy, and then I'll talk to our other couple of guests here. This is a significant development, isn't it, in football in Donegal and across the country?
Yeah, it's a huge development, Greg. I suppose, you look at the Premier Division last year, there was only 12 teams throughout the whole of Ireland, so to open up now to another 20 teams, essentially, it's great. Just to maybe explain to the listeners a bit more, in the Development League, the likes of them Premier Division teams will have under 23 teams in this league as well. So, for example, Shamrock Rovers will have an under 23 team where we have a full senior women's team. So that's just the wee difference there. So it just gives girls of the Northwest region an opportunity to play senior football, which is fantastic.
And in terms of access then to the top division, not getting ahead of ourselves, etc., promotion, relegation, that type of stuff, or is there...
Yeah, I see it working the same way maybe as the men's down the line. Now, it might take two or three years to get to that situation. Like I said, there's 12 in the Premier Division at the moment, but that'll probably be follow the senior, where maybe 10 in the Premier Division, maybe 10 in the First Division, for example. So that will be our ambition, is to get into the First Division, first of all, and then obviously try and get into the Premier Division and down the line, exactly.
I mentioned Cody Walsh there. Aisling Cole's with us as well, also the joint captain. Aisling, good morning to you.
Good morning.
As a player, I'm doing great, and thanks so much for coming on. As a player, what's the significance of this to you?
I think it's something we've all been waiting for now for a few years. I know myself, I think I've played under-19s for about 5 years now, so it's good to finally get a senior team in place.
And I suppose testing yourself as part of a team against, you know, some of the best around the country, and of course, too, some of the best young players from some of the biggest clubs.
Yeah, that's it. We'll be playing at a very high standard, I'd imagine. The under-19, I think the first year we didn't do as well, but the second and third year we competed with everyone. So hopefully now again, it'll be the same when this goes senior.
Cody, how long have you been playing, and what's your views on this development?
Well, this will be my fourth season with Harps. I can't wait. It's a really exciting time. Paddy and the board have been putting in a massive shift the past few years trying to get a senior team, so the older players in Donegal wouldn't have to go elsewhere to play at a high standard. So yeah, it's great.
And that's it. It means that you can sort of see a way to achieve. I mean, everyone obviously has their own goals, right? But if your ambition were to eventually play for the Republic of Ireland, for an example, you know, at senior level, not you, but other players necessarily, but that there's a pathway there. It seems like it potentially could be achievable.
Yeah, definitely. Like you see some of the Donegal players that are on the international level already, and they've moved elsewhere in the country and abroad, so it'd be good as a pathway in Donegal just to get it up and starting.
And what are your ambitions in your footballing career?
First of all, I want to do well with Harps. it'd be great to get a senior team in the First Division in the next 1 or 2 years, and just competing in that alone is a great achievement, and hopefully we could win some silverware along the way.
And Aisling, what's your ambitions?
It'd probably be the same as Cody, just to do well this season and see how we move to get into the Premiership eventually, hopefully. And yeah.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. And Paddy, you know, obviously we can be very parochial and say this is good for the club scene, for Finn Harps, and even the clubs that might feed into Finn Harps too. But I mean, it's these types of innovations can affect, down the line, make sure that we don't lose out on the next big star on a national scale as well.
Yeah, 100%, Greg, and that is the whole thing. As you mentioned the pathway earlier in introduction, the pathway is key, and we can't survive to about the local clubs bringing in gears under 6, under 8, whatever it is, and giving them something to aim for as well, and that's so important. And the two gears there have played for local clubs here in Donegal, the Donegal Women's League. Codex played for my school team. You know, so it's great to see them getting this opportunity now. Both, like, Aisling is actually teaching at the moment, Prince started primary school career. Cody's final year in college now. So, you know, these girls are very busy. They're working on the side. So it's great that they're actually getting this opportunity, but you're dead right. Like, we have to have that feeder system coming through as well, and that's where the pathway is key. And we need the support from the Donegal Women's League and the Shannon Women's League and to give these players something to aim for.
Well, that's it, isn't it? Because there are alternatives out there. You know, your club championship in GEA, you know, rugby obviously is growing in popularity, athletics, the more attractive you make football stroke soccer, the more likely you are to get the best to commit and compete.
100%. Like, as you know, my background is in PE. You were in our school a few weeks ago. And, you know, I encourage all kinds of sport. But it is, for these elite players especially, I think they have to have that to aim for. A lot of girls might get that opportunity, but they get to experience different sports then, which is great for them. There comes a stage where the girls have to decide themselves, maybe 16 or 17, yeah, you know what, I want to pursue down the football career. And Finn Harps will give them that opportunity now. And that wasn't there before, so at least now they have that opportunity. And that is the main point.
Yeah, and Aisling playing the home games at Finn Park too, and the new Finn Park when that actually is up and running too. I mean, it's a fantastic ground, as is, because it's historic, of course. But too, when it's developed, it's going to be something else.
Yeah, I think we're all really excited to play in Finn Park. I think we've been using Ilister now for the last number of years, and that's some pitch as well. But it'll be good to have our play of the games in Finn Park.
Yeah. Cody, what are you going to be going into after college? Aisling's balancing everything here between school and football and what have you. What's your plans?
Well, I'm actually studying in A2 Letterkenny, and I'm studying to become a PE teacher. So hopefully after this year, I'd either do a PGCE in England or go down to Limerick and do my master's.
Limerick sounds closer.
Yeah, it does.
Although,
yeah.
Is it? I don't know, with all the connections that we have now too. All right, very, very exciting times. Listen, thank you very much for joining us, Cody. It's been lovely seeing you, lovely speaking to you.
Thank you, Greg.
Okay, Aisling, did you get a snow day today?
Yeah, we got the day off, thankfully.
Hey, it suits me to get you on the show. Brilliant stuff. Thanks very much indeed. Look after yourself. And Paddy, again, it's nice, isn't it, to be at the start of something. I know there's an awful lot been going on heretofore and under-19s and all that type of stuff, but this feels like a big advancement, doesn't it, in the women's game?
100%. I just feel there's a whole fresh energy around the whole project as well. Desi McClinchy is our manager. Desi actually looks after Finn Park as well, so you can be sure he'll have it looking well for the game. Yeah, he'll have it tip-top shape for the game. So just thank everyone who's been part of the process, to be honest, over the last number of years, and for yourselves for giving us publicity as well. It's really much appreciated, Greg.
No, and keep us in the loop. It's we like to talk about all different types of stuff, and I love sport myself, so no problem there. Thanks so much, Paddy. Look after yourself. Great to see you again.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Bye-bye. Paddy McDade, Head of Women's Development at Finn Park. And also there we had Aisling Cole, and we had Cody Walsh. They're the joint captains of Finn Harps. So that's an exciting situation, and is a pathway potentially to Finn Harps' women's team having a place in the top tier. That's down the line, right? But unless these paths were put in place, it were never going to happen. Right, okay. Some of your comments here just before a break. Did Donegal County Council use eco-friendly grit, which doesn't have chlorine? I don't know, to be honest with you. And in trying to get to work, it's horrible to say, I didn't really care. But anyway. Hi, Greg. Can you tell me if the buses are running from Ballybuffet to Derry? Thank you and a happy new year to all at Highland. I don't know that information off of my hand, but if someone can let us know, we'll pass it on. Why is the mountain road not gritted from Buncrana to Carndonagh, asks a listener. If it's not on the route, you need to get onto your local councillors and get it on the route if you think it needs to be done. Due to the adverse weather conditions, the Donegal Sports Star Awards Committee launch will not go ahead this evening. It has already been rescheduled for this coming Wednesday evening at 6 p.m. at the Mount Errigal Hotel. No grit in Ard O'Donnell bunker. I would give the councillor a ring, you know, because an O'Brien and his team, they're not going to leave something empty for the fun of it either. It's not what they necessarily want to do. So give the council a call, and when it's safe to do so, I've no doubt that will be replenished for you. Rightio. So as I mentioned at the top of the show, quite a bit of flux on the national stage. Nicolas Maduro, he's been charged with narco-terrorism conspiracy, cocaine importation conspiracy, possession of machine guns and destructive devices, and conspiracy to possess machine guns and destructive devices against the United States. Donald Trump has described the charges brought against Maduro as responding to his campaign of deadly narco-terrorism against the US and its citizens. He was the leader of Venezuela. He's now been shackled and blindfolded and is to be brought before a court in New York a little later on this morning. Lots of international reaction. Iran and China, they've called for Maduro's immediate release. And Donald Trump may not stop there. He's got eyes on Greenland. He says that they need it. They're going to take it. Colombia as well, and other areas in South America. Christy Galligan, what's your views on this, Christy? I know you've been writing about it. Interested to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, well, look, like a lot of people, it came as no surprise that Trump took this action. I mean, this has been on for weeks. We have had over 100 people killed in both suspected, and I use the word underlying suspected, of carrying drugs from around that area as well. And unfortunately, we look at Donald Trump as a whole. You know, there's a lot of contradictions and with this man. And, you know, we know that his toppling Maduro is just proof that Trump is not just he's not an isolationist, he's a unilateralist. And he's an intense disdain, and he's shown that for multilateral institutions like the United Nations, World Trade Organization, even NATO to a certain degree. So he has decided, you know, he's a really transactional president, and that's all about transactional, and it's about the oil that is in Venezuela that the U.S. wants to extract and plenty of it, and to make America great again. That's the whole ethos here. If you're a strong military base or a strong military country, he's shown that he can flex his muscles just like Putin has done in Ukraine, and what possibly China will do with Taiwan, and who will stop them? You know,
well, why would they hold back now? You know, obviously America is very much backing Taiwan, but if Donald Trump is flexing his muscles, he's taking over countries. And listen, he has taken over Venezuela, whether it's phrased as that or not. He has said to its new leader, Delcy Rodriguez, that you'll pay a very big, heavy price, probably bigger than Maduro, if she doesn't do what is right. Okay, so that's effectively, we talked about in the past, not me and you, but it's been talked about generally that, you know, Zelensky was a puppet leader for the EU, etc. I mean, is that what Donald Trump is trying to do in Venezuela? And where next? Because he could go into Colombia next if he wants to. There's nothing to stop him. But what is going to stop the Chinese saying, well, we look weak now, let's go in and take Taiwan like we want to?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, that's my biggest concern, that international law norms, the UN Charter of Human Rights, the UN Charter itself, all of these things now be torn up and laid waste to. That, you know, that for many years we've had, well, we've had many wars over the last number of decades, and we've seen it in Iran, we were, should I say, Iraq and Syria and places like that there. And whenever America or other countries seem to go into these countries, it destabilizes them. And then what happens is, like Afghanistan, they'll police them for X number of years, and then all of a sudden, when they extract enough mineral wealth out of them, they leave them. And then those countries are worse off. And we've seen it now in relation to Trump's policies. I mean, some of the things he says is unintelligible, but his kind of romance with even Vladimir Putin is largely attributed to having a soft spot for him. Authoritarian figures. We all know that he wants to be an authoritarian figure, and that he wants to really, at the end of the day, it's all about that transaction, about making as much wealth for both the Trump dynasty as well as for his rich elite in America, his tech giants and others in America, making as much money as possible for those guys at the top. He doesn't realize right on his own doorstep he has a problem with inflation, problem with food prices, he increased tariffs, people are losing their jobs. You know, federal employees, and he has a midterm elections coming up, which could change the whole aspect of the.
The last thing the American people want the U.S. involved in other situations. My concern is greater, though. History has shown us that, you know, you can have relative peace on this earth for a certain amount of time, and then you have a war, and you know. And I think sometimes we think because we're living now in this modern times that we're more civilized than we actually are. If you look through history over the centuries for hundreds and hundreds and thousands of years, there does come relative peace, but eventually we find a way to self-destruct. And I just wonder if we're in that cycle at the moment. We seem to think naively that, you know, that could never happen again. But I'll tell you one thing, the more that's happening now, the more makes me think, right, are we in this cycle? Are we in this cycle where we're going to hit that self-destruct button again as humans?
Yeah, well, my biggest concern really at the present moment, we look at the European allies, America's European allies. They've kind of turned their back on the European allies under the Trump administration anyway. And he's really become that sort of isolationist type president where everything is focused literally on America and America alone. Doesn't realize that there's 770,000 people who don't have proper shelter or homes in America. So many things happen within his own sphere. But this idea that he can flex the military muscle, do as he will, without referring to Congress to get the okay to do these, take these military actions, that's very concerning.
Yep.
And that's right out of the Putin playbook as well. Putin doesn't defer to his, I'm sure, to his parliament every time he takes actions in Ukraine or anywhere else. And that's the biggest concern for Europe primarily. Even Ireland is a small nation who's fairly defenceless. You might shout at neutrality, but neutrality is no good when you have guys like Trump and Putin and others who flex their military muscle, who they say, I'm going to take Greenland or I'm going to take Colombia, and there's nothing you will do.
If Russia said really in the morning, if Russia said in the morning that if strategically it's advantageous for Trump to take Greenland, it would be very advantageous for us to take Ireland. Like, what do people think would happen next? Anyway, listen, thanks very much indeed, Christy Galligan there, 086 60 25,000. Any views in relation to that? A caller says, in the interest of fairness, the move was all about the economics of it. Russia was the biggest market and had an eye on taking it. So for once, Trump did right by moving fast. But this is a country of millions and millions of people living their lives, and they've been taken over by another country. It's not chess pieces. Could someone ask Trump to come and take over Ireland ASAP? Be careful what you wish for. Another, Venezuela is a distraction before people get back from holidays and all the post-birth abortions and other murderers he's been implicated in the Epstein files start getting talked about, like the day before the strike, links between Epstein's ring and using the Mar-a-Lago as a recruitment ground were being established. Listen, Trump's completely insulated from the Epstein files. You only have to look at someone like Elon Musk, who come out on his social media and said the quiet bit out loud. He said he's in the files, and now he's back being a cheerleader for Donald Trump again. So I don't think Donald Trump's going to face any issues in relation to that. I have a daughter travelling to Dublin this morning. She's travelling via the mountaintop in Letterkenny to Monaghan. What are the roads like? I don't know. I can't give you I can't give you an exact breakdown of all of those roads. Not that you're looking forward. I wouldn't be going if it were me. That's all I'm saying. Sometimes you have to do these things, but it's just not a fantastic morning. Greg, someone text and they're about on about the bus from Derry to Ballybuffet. It came this morning, but the 8:15 bus that was to be in Ballybuffet did not arrive until 9:40. So they are running, but they are running behind. Is there anywhere that takes Christmas cards, like a charity or recycling centre? We get this question like clockwork every year, and I still can't remember where they go, but I do know there are places out there that take them. So if you can let us know, we'll let them know. 086 60 25,000. Do we not have snow ploughs in Donegal? Northern Ireland have great gritting systems and snow ploughs. We are 20 years behind Northern Ireland. Does that road from Derry to Belfast, is that not closed as soon as there's any sprinkling of snow? But anyway, maybe you're right. We do, of course, have snow ploughs, but there's a lot of roads and everyone wants their road done. And if they're not on the route, they're not on the route. My daughter had a bad collision on a road yesterday because it was not gritted. Why was this road not gritted? Two cars were written off. I'm not sure. I couldn't mention the road because it could well have been gritted. and I couldn't state that it hasn't been. But I have not ignored your comment, and we will chase that up. All right, that's where we have to leave it on the show today. Thank you very much indeed for all of your texts and your comments and your calls, and thanks for listening. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 9 a.m.